The Reality of Promotion by A. Marguerite, read by Corey Kithonia. Part 9 of the A Monstrous Regiment series. Rated mature and includes graphic depictions of violence and major character death. For the fandoms, Pride and Prejudice and Temeraire, featuring the characters Elizabeth Bennet, Charlotte Lucas, and Jane Roland. "You're needed at Dover," said Captain Roland, bleakly. Under the miasma of gunpowder smoke, she was pale. "At Dover?" Lizzie repeated. It wasn't that she didn't understand, for Lizzie had guessed at the contents of the letter when Captain Roland had looked up from the paper and stared straight at Lizzie. Captain Roland's bleakness had only confirmed it. This was the news Lizzie had resolutely refused to think about all her life. The thing she knew must happen if she was to take her proper place in the world, and yet the thing she most dreaded. "Yes, the French have crossed the channel. Your aunt's division..." Captain Roland stepped closer and put a hand on Lizzie's shoulder. "There's no easy way to say this. They engaged in battle and were overpowered." They were on Exidium's back. One of the couriers was struggling to keep pace at the Longwing's shoulder and was anxiously filling in Exidium on the situation at Dover. Snatches of this news hit Lizzie like grape shot. The French crossed the channel, overwhelmed by a superior force, numbers not what they had been because of the plague, battle, a very bloody one. Captain Roland had been quiet so long, Lizzie... Captain Roland had been quiet so long, Lizzie could not bear it any longer. She tried for a joke. "Say it plain, soldier. That's what we are." "Aye, true enough." But this did not help. Behind her goggles, Captain Roland's eyes were full of tears. Lizzie forced herself to say, "The French killed the division, haven't they?" Captain Roland looked a little relieved. She lifted her goggles and tipped out the tears, drying her eyes on the back of her glove. "It's not as bad as that, though it's ghastly. A French aviator stabbed your Aunt Bess through the lung. Wollstonecraft landed immediately at the covert so that she could be seen to. The rest of the division is still fighting, but it's looking damn bad for them and for your aunt." Lizzie gripped the pommel of her sword until it bit into her hand. She felt as if she had been stabbed with her aunt. The pain of it was excruciating. Lizzie felt herself shaking. Captain Roland tightened her grip on Lizzie's shoulder. "You're needed. Captain Hopkins is here with Cressida. They'll take you to Dover." Captain Roland unhooked Lizzie's carabiners. "Come on." Lizzie tried to move, but her legs did not want to hold her weight. She staggered into Captain Roland. Captain Roland signaled to Freddy. He grasped the guide ropes and pulled himself hand over hand towards them. "God bless Freddy." He took a look at the two of them and said, quietly, "We'll help you, Lizzie. I know it is useless to tell you not to worry." "She could recover," Captain Roland offered, with obvious uncertainty. Lizzie said, hearing and hating the edge of tearful hysteria in her voice, No, don't, please, I know this is it. I know they have killed her, a sword to the lung, that cannot be recovered from." Freddy had taken one of Lizzie's arms and Captain Roland the other. He sounded lost as he murmured, "That's it. One foot before the other. To Cressida. Come now. Lizzie, you've trained your whole life for this." "I thought I had more time," said Lizzie. She felt young and weak and helpless with misery. "Wollstonecraft will help you," said Captain Roland. "Ask her advice." Somehow they were before Cressida. Captain Hopkins moved her closer so that Lizzie had only to step down onto Cressida. Yet her fingers would not work. She could not hook in. Captain Hopkins had to do it for her. Captain Roland said, "None of us ever feels ready for the epaulettes, Bennet. But believe me, you are. You've learned from the best." Lizzie tried to laugh, but as soon as Cressida pulled away, she found herself trying to stifle sobs. "Wind's strong today," Captain Hopkins yelled over his shoulder with rough sympathy. "You'll have to shout if you need anything. I'm deaf to everything else." This kindness was too much. Lizzie pushed up her goggles and cried into her gloved hands. Death in battle had always been a constant possibility, but a possibility, never a certainty. It wasn't supposed to be like this. Aunt Bess wasn't supposed to die when Lizzie was 18 and had only been a lieutenant for 2 years. Aunt Bess wasn't supposed to die at all. She still had an aspect of godlike invulnerability to Lizzie. Aunt Bess was so strong, so skilled, so formidable. How could anyone get the better of her? But someone had. When Cressida landed at the Dover Covert, Lizzie tumbled off her to see her aunt staggering towards them. Aunt Bess was only in trousers and boots, with heavy bandages about her chest. Officers and doctors were crowding about her, frantic. Wollstonecraft was close behind, head so low her tusks skimmed the dirt. Lizzie somehow made her knees work and rushed over, catching her aunt just before she fell. "Aunt Bess," said Lizzie, feeling herself start to cry again. "Oh, Aunt Bess, you ought to rest, surely." "Too much to do," said Aunt Bess, gripping Lizzie tightly. Her voice came out in painful-sounding wheezes. "Captain Gardner, please," said a man in a bloody apron. "You must rest." "You did your best, Doc," said Aunt Bess with a grim smile. "I know you did. It's all right." "How can it be all right?" Lieutenant Elaine asked, tears streaming down his face. "Lizzie's here." Aunt Bess looked up at Lizzie with what Lizzie could not help but feel was misplaced confidence. "Don't cry, Lieutenant. I've taught her well, and so has Admiral Roland. I'll be damned glad to be out of this pain." "I'm here," said Lizzie with a false show of cheer. "I'm here, Aunt Bess." "I'm damned sorry, Lizzie," she said. "I thought you'd have 20 years more to learn your trade. But God bless you for starting now." Her voice had faded away almost to nothing towards the end. The people around them scattered. Lizzie looked up to see Wollstonecraft immediately before them. Oh, my girl," said Aunt Bess, weakly raising a hand to the dragon. Lizzie gently leaned her aunt against Wollstonecraft's nose.
"Bess," said Wollstonecraft.
In accents of such grief, Lizzie had to screw up her face to keep from sobbing. "I love you," said Aunt Bess, wearily, scratchily. "I did my best by you, and you by me. Lizzie will now. Look after her. She'll need your help."
"I will,"
said Wollstonecraft. Aunt Bess hugged Wollstonecraft's snout. "My dearest, don't like to leave you, but Lizzie, good egg." Then, in a sudden burst of energy, Aunt Bess half turned, raised her left hand, and grabbed Lizzie's sleeve. Her voice was faint, but her look intense as she said, "Everything is yours except money in the funds for Hetty Campbell. And this," she raised her right hand and the ring finger a little extended. On it, she wore a ring popular in the 1790s, a lover's eye painted on a small oval of porcelain, set on top of a gold band. Lizzie recognized the mild gray gaze of the Drury Lane actress, Henrietta Hetty Campbell. Aunt Bess had always referred to Hetty as her wife, jokingly among aviators and seriously to Lizzie. "See, she gets it. And return her letters." "I will give them to her in person," said Lizzie, grasping her aunt's right hand. "I will make sure she wants for nothing, I promise you." "She's richer than me," said Aunt Bess, amused, "but..." Pressing Lizzie's hand and releasing it, "you're good girl." Aunt Bess turned her head, wheezing. "Coat." Second Lieutenant Lucas quietly came forward and draped a uniform coat over Aunt Bess's shoulders. Aunt Bess shook her head a little, sinking against Wollstonecraft's snout. Her legs seemed to have given out on her. If Aunt Bess hadn't been draped over Wollstonecraft's snout, she would have been on the ground. Aunt Bess raised a shaking hand to the epaulettes of her coat. Lieutenant Lucas understood much quicker than Lizzie. She took out a dagger from her boot and cut at the stitching holding the epaulettes into the shoulders of Aunt Bess's coat.
I need pins, Lieutenant Lucas called. Needle and thread, but pins first.
She looked at Lizzie. Her eyes were red-rimmed.
Take off your flying coat, Lieutenant Bennett.
Lizzie fumbled her flying coat off and let it fall to the ground. Someone rushed forward with pins as Lieutenant Lucas guided Aunt Bess's hand, curling her fingers around the gold braid.
Help me, said Aunt Bess, her voice so faint Lizzie thought she had imagined it.
They all did. Wollstonecraft nudged Aunt Bess a little more upright, a little closer to Lizzie. Lizzie leaned forward and down so that Aunt Bess had only to drop her hand to clap the epaulette on Lizzie's shoulder. Lieutenant Lucas guided her hand and pinned the epaulette in place. Aunt Bess's each labored breath sounded as if it had been extracted from her at great effort, and yet she clung on until she placed the second epaulette to Lizzie's shoulder. There was blood at her lips, and she said, Captain Bennett of Wollstonecraft. Wollstonecraft made a low, sad, keening noise that rattled through them both. Lizzie raised a shaking hand in salute.
Reporting for duty.
At last, Aunt Bess smiled and leaned forward to rest her head against Lizzie's new epaulettes. Lizzie felt as if her legs could not hold them both up, and when Aunt Bess stopped breathing and Lizzie could no longer stand, she found Wollstonecraft's nose at her side and Wollstonecraft's forelegs about them both. All that Aunt Bess had placed on her shoulders weighed so heavily upon her. Lizzie did not know how she could fly, how she could do anything, really. The noise of battle had been a distant constant in the background, but it was growing steadily louder. Lieutenant Lucas said, from the other side of Wollstonecraft's arm, Captain Bennett, there's a courier from London. The Admiralty has told us to abandon Dover and fall back on London.
Oh, God, she was the division captain. It was her job to convey the order to figure out how this was to be accomplished.
Wollstonecraft disconsolately nosed at both her and Aunt Bess. Wollstonecraft. Her voice did not sound like her own. Lizzie cleared her throat, starting again.
Wollstonecraft.
Yes, Lizzie,
said Wollstonecraft, subdued. We'll need to... We must take her to London for burial. Her voice broke. Lizzie hated the sound of it. But Wollstonecraft slowly dragged her forearm away. Several of Aunt Bess's officers bore the body away. Lizzie watched them go. Lieutenant Lucas remained by her. Where's the first lieutenant? Asked Lizzie, eyes fixed on the group conveying her aunt a little ways distant, towards a waiting brandy barrel. This was the standard method of transporting a body to its final resting place. Lizzie had often seen it. Why did it strike her now as so strange, so obscene? Lieutenant Lucas said quietly. He was shot at the start of the battle. It is only me and Aliane now of the lieutenants. Lizzie at last tore her eyes away. First Lieutenant Lucas.
Yes, Captain?
It jolted her unpleasantly to be a captain, but the epaulettes were on her shoulders. She felt their full weight. Tell everyone around the covert to burn their papers, anything that could, that if they fell into the hands of the enemy.
Aye, aye, Captain.
Wait, said Lizzie, putting her hand to Charlotte's arm. I...
That is a good first order, said Wollstonecraft unexpectedly. Perhaps Lieutenant Lucas might also tell everyone to prepare for immediate departure. It is only me and the couriers on the ground. The rest of the division is aloft and will have to fly off at once. We will not be able to manage most personal effects. Priority should go to ammunition and the provisions.
Yes, said Lizzie, leaning gratefully on Wollstonecraft. Yes, but Lieutenant Lucas, please be sure to bring my aunt's traveling writing desk to me. I have promises to keep. Lieutenant Lucas nodded.
Shall I make ready?
Wollstonecraft hinted, once Lieutenant Lucas had departed. Lizzie took a moment more to accustom herself to her epaulettes, to her responsibilities, to her new position. She told herself, You have been raised to this. She tried to imagine herself in the captain's place, at Wollstonecraft's neck.
She felt Wollstonecraft's breath streaming out about her on each side, like elevating gusts of wind. "Yes," said Lizzie, opening her eyes and picking her flying coat off the ground. "Make ready. We must leave as soon as we possibly can. Once we are in the air, we will signal to the rest of the division that we are to fall back to London." Wollstonecraft said,
"Aye, aye, Captain."
The end.